I think it's a film that's been kind of dismissed as a bit of titillating fluff for quite a long time, but it's actually quite an unassuming and funny film that pushes at doors that a lot of romance mainstream movies wouldn't dare to. I've seen this film many times, and if anything, it gets more interesting the more I see it. And there's something about Jennifer Grey's performance and her self-discovery that I find really uplifting. And also what Penny goes through in the film, the fact that you see her at the end having gone through all that, dancing with everyone at the end. And I think that that's a really kind of consoling message. And yeah, it's just a really life-affirming movie.
Hello, film fans. Joining FlixWatch today, we have Kat.
Hi.
Rich.
Hello.
And as always, Kobe.
Hello.
And we're here to have the time of our lives with Dirty Dancing. Thank you, as always, to the Mighty People for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Welcome to FlixWatcher Podcast. Joining us remotely today, we have Kat and Rich. If you could please say hello to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about who you are and what you do, please.
My name's Rich Nelson. I did the Betamax Video Club podcast and now the Don't You Want Me podcast with Kat.
How's it going with Don't You Want Me podcast? You said Betamax Video. You've come on here before talking about Coming to America and another film. I can't remember what that was.
It was the I Lost My Hand. It was...
Lost My Body,
oh,
but it was a hand.
Lost My Body.
It was that. Yeah. I can't remember how many episodes of Betamax Video Club we did, including Dirty Dancing. So it was nice to watch it again, because I think, as we'll discuss, it's one of those that I found surprisingly enjoyable as an adult man. And and now we're doing a podcast called Don't You Want Me, which is about relationships in movies, so romantic, platonic. We haven't got on to family relationships yet, but I'm sure that will be coming in due course.
Mm. Well, first of all, one thing I should say is Helen is wearing a Kellerman's t-shirt, which is probably already leaning into her scores for this, guys. Say your predictions now for this. But already disclaimers, Rich, about liking it as an adult man. I don't know. Is that... Why do you feel he had to put those guardrails up?
Well, no, I think it's almost like the way the film is marketed and the way it's perceived is that it's a chick flick. And again, it's completely not that at all. And yet that's how the perception of the film is that, oh, it's a chick flick. It's what groups of hen nights go to and girls, you know, and it's one of those. But then when you watch it and when you boil down to everything within the film underneath the surface, there's so many themes about class and all these things about stuff that you don't expect. You just expect it to be like a happy chap sing-along where everyone's happy in a holiday camp and dancing away, and there's all these stories within, and it's really deep, and the places it goes to are the kind of things you wouldn't expect from a film you'd see programmed on Channel 5 at 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon when it's raining outside.
I mean, you couldn't even show this at 2 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, could you? The themes thematically is quite
too much sexy dancing.
Oh no, it's Channel 5 though, isn't it?
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. Loose morals. Kat, who are you?
My name's Katrin Lowe. I'm one half of Don't You Want Me podcast. And one thing I also really like to do is bang on about popular music and how it's used in film and performance. I've talked to Rich on his Betamax Video Club podcast about Purple Rain. I talked to Petros, who I know has been on here too, on his Coppola Connections podcast about Saturday Night Fever. And I've also guested on the podcasts Head Ballet and Look Some Familiar talking about pop obscurities. So I'm very much a pop geek, which kind of feeds into this magnificent film we're going to talk about today.
Already the guys put their hearts on their sleeves with this.
One of my first notes in my notes is soundtrack of bangers.
I've never actually listened to the soundtrack in isolation, I don't think.
What? I used to work in a music shop, remember them kids, and we used to have the soundtrack on like special offer, and we just used to sell like stacks of it every Saturday, to the point where I was like, people surely must have the soundtrack by now, but no, people would keep coming.
It's like that scene in High Fidelity where they say, I'm going to sell like 15 copies of
exactly that.
Yeah.
Except obviously not quite as cool, because it's me singing Hungry Eyes and selling 10 copies.
The Beta Band, that's what it is in High Fidelity. Oh, I would not have been able to sleep tonight. Kat, can you tell us why you chose Dirty Dancing? And then I'm going to get the I'm going to get the countdown timer up, in which you'll have 60 seconds or fewer to give us the synopsis.
Okay, well, I chose this for reasons that we've already gone into. I'm very into films that use music well, and most movies would be lucky to have one musical sequence that's stuck in the public's consciousness. This one has about five. We credit people like Tarantino for being very particular about what kind of music he uses in his films, and Eleanor Bergstein did that with this film. She sent out the scripts to producers with a tape and was really specific about which song she wanted, even though they were a nightmare to get the licensing rights to. And as we've also gone into, I think it's a film that's been kind of dismissed as a bit of titillating fluff for quite a long time, but it's actually quite an unassuming and funny film that pushes at doors that a lot of romance mainstream movies wouldn't dare to.
Okay, and your timer starts now.
Baby is on her way to the Catskills with her family, reading a book called Plight of the Peasant in the back of the car, but with some denim short shorts secreted in her suitcase. At this holiday camp, she's made to do underwhelming old-fashioned activities such as being sawed in half and given chickens by Newman from Seinfeld. One night, Kellerman's worker and overlooked potential suitor, Billy, sneaks her into the staff cabin, where she meets the open-shirted Johnny and his brilliant dance partner, Penny, who went on to inspire Richard Marx's 80s power ballad, Right Here Waiting. This night of hip-rolling leads to an education for Baby over the following weeks. Things will never be the same again for her family, for dance montages, for the staff at Kellerman's resort, or for, indeed, America.
Wow. I interrupted and interjected. I apologize for that. That was beautiful. That was beautiful. Thank you very much for that. She did wear hot pants. You're right. I think I'm sure I dismissed it as fluff back, you know, when I was an immature. And I think the thing that turned me around to it was reading the Hadley Freeman book, which I can't remember the top of my head now.
Life moves pretty fast.
Yeah. And she was talking about the storyline of the abortion. And I'm sure when I first watched this, maybe like 12, that's probably the kind of thing that completely went over my head. I didn't understand anything that was going on in that kind of storyline. But like you say, the dismissiveness of the rich versus the poor, you know, upstairs, downstairs, the classism, and also this, I can't remember if it was, or clearly abortion wasn't legal in the States at that time. But that kind of underpinning this story is insane, and leaning into, you know, Baby's just pure-hearted desire to help people no matter who they are and where they were is kind of, it's perhaps the most endearing part of the story for me, rather than the romance between her and Johnny. I almost wish it wasn't really romance, it was just a friendship rather than, you know, than getting together and hooking up. I don't know, is that a fair point?
I think their relationship for me is probably like the weakest part of the film, that you kind of think that like maybe Johnny should end up with someone like Penny, because it kind of feels like they were like, oh, how do we end this? Let's make them like together, because they had chemistry when they're dancing, so that must mean they're going to work out in real life. And it's kind of like the least interesting part for me about it, I think.
What's the kind of perceived age difference between Johnny and Baby in this as well?
Yeah, that's something that's interesting, because I think that there isn't necessarily meant to be a huge age difference, but I think that when you're introduced to it, well, I was introduced to it when I was probably about 9 by my friend in her folks' house. I think I can remember having a moment where I thought, oh, but he, you know, he's a bit old, isn't he? I mean, I thought that at the time.
Maybe it's just because he's streetwise and she's not yet.
Oh no, well, they were teenagers together in, was it Red Dawn? They were both in, and I think they like, on the set of that, they really didn't get on. I think he didn't like her, and that kind of carried over a little bit into this. So I don't know what the real life age difference was, but he definitely, I think, with the leather jacket and all the swagger he had. I mean, we talked about Point Break and about this just Swayze's pure sex charisma. That's like, he's the anti Rick Mayall in Bottom, isn't he? And he's just swaggering around and has just swept her off her feet. But she, again, is made to look younger probably than she is. So I think it kind of works both ways.
Yeah, and also I think it does actually work in terms of redressing the power balance, because maybe if they look too similar ages, then the fact that he has a bit of experience on her gives him that authority when he's teaching her to dance, I think. So I think it does actually work.
Okay. I mean, it's no Manhattan, Woody Allen and 17-year-old. So that's... I'm prepared to move past it. Plus also, Baby does very much have her own agency in this, and she does drive a lot of the plot, which is always great to kind of see. I mean, we talked about Swayze briefly, and we've had Swayze in Roadhouse.
And Ghost.
Roadhouse. Is there a peak Swayze film? Is he never good? I've never seen Red Dawn. But what is your Swayze go-to film?
I'm kind of sitting between Roadhouse and Point Break. Again, being more of an action thing, but you can see how good he is in this, and he does, once you sort of drill into his insecurities and his issues about essentially being used by the sort of married women. I mean, this film is essentially set in the hotel from The Shining, but Butlins, and he's getting basically having all these women throwing themselves at him constantly because he's sex Swayze. But it's once he gets down to that, about how he grew up on the streets and having nothing and seeing what Baby does, and you know, as we see towards the end, when she in his eyes redeems herself by sort of telling her dad that they've been intimate, and I think how he does that, it's quite easy to go, I had nothing, and it all comes across as a little bit bland, but he does kind of show that he is insecure around himself, and underneath the swagger, that there is, you know, a little boy just desperate to get out.
Kat, have you got a peak Swayze film?
I think it's between this and Point Break. I think his performance in Point Break is really interesting. He makes a brilliantly complex villain in that, and even in Point Break they give him a little bit of you know, the bit where he's jumping out of the plane, he's doing somersaults in the air, you get to see a little bit of his balletic skills there, as you do here as well. So I really, yeah, it's between this and Point Break, I think, for me.
I'm guessing Point Break for you, Helen.
I might make a case for Donnie Darko. Like, I think he's like brilliant in Donnie Darko. Really kind of manages to play the character like spectacularly well. I mean, I'm quite late to Dirty Dancing. I saw it when I was a teenager, but I'd already seen Pulp Fiction before then, and was more into kind of violence and horror and science fiction, and it's kind of like watched
dancing,
it with my friend, and I was a bit like, it's kind of all right, like it's kind of fine, don't really fancy Patrick Swayze. And then wasn't really until I worked at Secret Cinema on one of the earlier productions of Dirty Dancing, which is where I got my tea, and just kind of seeing fans' enthusiasm for it, and that production, and watching it many times in a row, that really, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, there's a lot more going to it than maybe I first snubbed as a teenager. So
I put a shout out for Donnie Darko. I think that the character he plays there is not in it for long, but it's definitely impactful. But I think I've only watched Roadhouse once, and I thought it was fucking hilarious and brilliant and insane. But also Ghost, Point Break. I'm not going to answer that question.
He's got too many.
That's the thing about this and Point Break, is that they're both very much, even though this isn't directed by a woman, they're both very much female gaze movies, and people talk about them in that way. And it is true in this film. That's why I think Baby still does feel as if she has the power, as well as the narrative that they give her, is because the camera kind of lingers on him much more than it does on her. So you sort of see it through her eyes, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. The darker underpinnings of this film, like I say, when you guys first watched it, did you understand what was going on with the abortion storyline and what was playing out there? Or
I didn't see this film till I was probably in my mid-20s.
Oh, okay. So,
and,
yeah.
And even then, I kind of dismissed it because, if I'm trying to remember rightly, this made me sound like Joey. This girl suggested I watch it, and it was her favourite film, and I, being the grumpy cynic, was like, oh, yeah, yeah, and didn't really pay attention. And it was only later on when I read the same book by Hadley Freeman and kind of actually fought beyond all that and, you know, actually sit there and pay attention. And it was surprising because, again, I was kind of suckered in, almost suckered away by the marketing of the film. And it does, you know, it's all the writing's in pink and it's all people dancing, all sexy and all that stuff. Not the sort of stuff I normally go for because I like Roadhouse. And unless Johnny rips Robbie's throat out of his neck, which he did in Roadhouse, that, you know, that, yes, I'd go for that every time. But this was, I think this, when you go into that and you kind of think the way it's so subtly done as well, the way the dad is, you know, he's a nice guy, he's a doctor, but he's judging as well. He judges Johnny because he assumes because of the mannerism.
Johnny's scum
and that Johnny knocked Penny up and has left her. And as he said, who's responsible for this girl? And the fact that because Robbie, who actually has done it, has supposed aspirations to be a doctor like him, he's kind of, oh, but I wouldn't, Mel, he's nice, give him a big fat check. And there's other things as well, you know, the way that Robbie tries to, you know, he's just as much of a shagger as anyone else. He's trying on with baby's sister and the lady that accuses Swayze of nicking the wallet. It's, you know, there's so many layers to this film that you kind of need to sit there and pay attention to. And it's difficult because there is so much there and it is covered in fluff because that's the way it's presented in many ways. You do have to kind of look for it if you're not already there.
Robbie is the true villain of this whole piece.
Pure evil.
Another way in which you can read it, I think, after you've seen it a few times, is that it's like a film about the human body and everything it's capable of, but also the ways in which we're all kind of vulnerable. Like, you know, you can learn to dance if you want, but then if you get involved with someone like Robbie, you could end up, you know, in a state and kind of need Dr. Houseman to come and help you out and things, you know. It's and then also the thing of him, of Johnny lifting baby above his head, sort of supporting her physically in that way. I don't know. There's all of these interesting themes going on in it.
I like it. I like your thought pattern there.
Yeah. I was going to say it's very interesting because they never, I don't think they even mention that she's pregnant. I think the choice of kind of words and what they don't say is really interesting, and it's all very kind of hush hush. So I guess if you're watching it maybe when you're younger, it's not explicit, it's only certain things are sort of implied. You're not kind of going to know what they're implying or what they're kind of like code or sort of things they say. So I think maybe that was a kind of way that they got around being able to make the film, because if they sort of said, you know, oh, this is a film about an abortion gone bad, but with some sexy dancing, studios would have gone, absolutely not. Yeah. You're not doing that. Whereas they've gone, sexy dancing, but abortion. Yeah. And then that's kind of how they managed to get away with being able to tell the story.
I hope that's how they did the pitch there. using that kind of sing-songy delivery that you just did there. There's a really good TV series on, a documentary series on Netflix called The Movies That Made Us. And they spend 45 minutes on this, and I can't remember the ins and outs of it, but it's a lot of fun. Very, very cheesy way to show a documentary, but the story behind Dirty Dancing is quite in depth.
Is that like the way that they, in Taken, they never use the word kidnapped? They always say Taken.
Is that right?
Yeah, like this is a film about kidnapping and sex trafficking and all this stuff. They never use the word kidnapping, it's all Taken. And it's just, is that as long as you present it with the right word, I guess a film called Kidnap, it's a bit too obvious.
Well, guys, let's get to the dancing part of this. Helen said sexy dancing. Was it sexy dancing?
Yeah.
There was more of an accent there, wasn't there?
Sexy dancing. Like the, when baby gets into the club, the secret staff club, and she sees what they're up to and they're dancing that they're doing and they're all sweaty and there's people of colour dancing and it's like, oh, things are happening in here. Everyone's got cool hair. Everyone just looks awesome and sweaty and they all know the moves. Some of that awkward bit where you're trying to dance someone and you're doing one dance, they're doing the other. Everyone's just cool.
I think you have to set the remind yourselves that this is set in the 60s, I guess. If I walked into that club and people grinding like that, I'd be like, oh, that's a bit gross. that's not interesting. But obviously, in the backdrop of a very much, you know, waspy background, that is super. It's like a bee to honey for her, isn't it?
Yeah, and they do a similar thing in that scene, I think, to what they do in the crowd scenes in a film like Purple Rain and Saturday Night Fever, where they clearly got people that looked like real people. They didn't just get a sort of a load of models to dance. And that really adds to the texture of that scene, I think. You know, they've got some really charismatic couples dancing that kind of almost steal the scene, actually. You can really sort of think of them in your mind's eye. And I think that song, you know, Do You Love Me by the Contours, it's just such a great record, and that's, you just hear it so much now, and it, you know, it's because of that scene, I think, that it's really sort of, you know, made sure that you always hear it, don't you, if you go to any nostalgia nights.
I think I like the way, obviously, picking up Saturday Night Fever, Purple Rain is still a film I haven't seen, much to my shame, but it's always like the underclass, the lower classes are the ones that get up, spruced up for the weekend and get into a bit of, you know, sexy dancing on a Saturday night, isn't it? And
Titanic.
Yeah, yeah. Possibly. Yeah. I've not seen that.
The Irish sexy dancing.
Is that what they do, is it? Yeah. Upstairs, downstairs.
Yeah, and I mean, we've not talked about it yet. There is obviously the great set piece at the end, but then the training montage as well, and spaghetti arms. Like, what are spaghetti arms? I've just got it in my notes. Like, what are they?
This is my zone. This is your zone. I thought it was a really cool montage, actually. And
is that the Hungry Eyes one?
Mm.
Yeah, like there's the scene where Patrick Swayze is sitting there on a cushion with his legs folded, just watching. Is it Penny and Baby?
Just wearing pants, aren't they? They're wearing like pants and high heels and maybe leg warmers or something. But it's definitely like pants and high heels.
Like, and he's just sitting there like Vic Reeves rubbing his thighs.
Yes, this is excellent. Excellent,
ladies. It is my birthday. Carry on. We put a little crown on.
Well, I really like that bit on the log, actually. Because that looked, they did that for real. I don't know if they must have had crash mats and stuff there, but that's, I'm not sure you'd do that now, would you? Even in a Marvel film.
Be CGI'd.
I think Patrick Swayze was notorious for taking those kind of risks, as I think in Point Break, they had to stop him from skydiving because he became addicted to it. So in the end, the health and safety people had to say, you've got to just stop doing so much skydiving. And in this, I think he was similarly sort of fearless on the log and then did injure him. So there's a few things that he did where he pushed the boat out a bit too much.
He hurt his knee so much so that the final scene at the end, they weren't sure if he could do the jump off the stage.
Yeah.
That's another thing in the movies that made us, they tell that story about him
doing the final. It did it in slow motion, though, so it wouldn't have hurt.
Yeah. so it lands softly. Yeah. What were your favourite dance scenes then in this? And songs?
I think of songs, and again, it's slightly off kilter that... Baby's sister, the one she sings,
oh my God,
the hula one. It's just the it's like one of those voices you hear in your sleep, in your dreams when they're being haunted. It's good that she's getting involved with Newman, you know, he's leading in his his sort of, I know, because someone had a Twitter poll around, was it Newman or Nedry?
Yeah, I did that on my Instagram.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. And yeah. I always think of him as Newman, but he's there with his sort of bad jokes. But, you know, the way she really sells herself for that role, it's nice that, you know, I mean, on these holiday camps, people do get involved. But that's the kind of song. I don't think that's going to be enticing too many people if you play that in your music shop, Helen. I don't think that'll be getting people to buy the tape or the 45.
It was so weird that I thought again, this is the 60s, but people going on holiday to get involved in the shows and the cabarets.
Doing the bunny hop,
get me a sun lounger.
forced fun.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the way the whole film, the first thing that you hear with this film is the beginning of the Ronettes Be My Baby, you hear that lovely wall of sound production. And that's what a brilliant way to begin a film. It's how all films should begin.
When when Scorsese does it, it's art.
Exactly. And also Solomon Burke's Cry to Me that you hear in the love scene, I think is a really, really brilliant record too. And Love Man by Otis Redding, also brilliant.
I mean, we got to, no one's talking
time
about
of the, my life.
Yeah, exactly.
Was that timely? Was that was made for the film, wasn't it?
I don't know. Yeah. Was it made for the film?
They were singing to a song from the future. Because Swayze was Johnny was singing it to Baby while they were dancing. So it wasn't dubbed over the top. So it's maybe he's Marty McFly.
Layers upon layers upon layers.
Yeah, but
layers
a good storm. Link though to the past is the fact that it's by Jennifer Warnes and Bill Medley, and Bill Medley was one half of the Righteous Brothers. So
oh, was he?
Yeah, so that kind of, it is an 80s record, but it harks back to the period that it's.
That is from.
So your kids are going to love it.
Yeah, exactly.
The thing about this song is, if this comes on at a wedding and you're not dancing, then you've got no heart or soul in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's always someone, couples, that try and do the lifts at least. Come on.
Normally after a
give
few
a go.
Kebabs.
Give us a go. Yeah.
So there's videos of them, and it's always outside of a town centre of a Saturday evening. Landing face first.
I'm sure I've tried the lift at one point. Tried the lift. But it's a club banger, and I love it when they come down. It's not an aisle, but it is an aisle. We're coming down with the kind of shoulder sways and hip sway, led by Patrick Swayze and Penny's there.
The choreographer was Kenny Ortega, who did a lot of stuff with Michael Jackson, and he did the Ferris Bueller big routine and Ferris Bueller and Pretty
Chicago.
In Pink. And I did a whole load of stuff. So you can really tell, can't you? Choreography is great.
Yeah, those group, that particular scene in particular, when they do that at Secret Cinema, it is amazing. And it's a really great experience to be in with all the dancing as well.
Yeah.
Have they done it a couple of times at Secret Cinema, Dirty Dancing?
They have, yeah. I believe if you've never seen Dirty Dancing in Secret Cinema, that it's been postponed to next year. So I think if you're keen to experience it, there are tickets available for next year. It's pretty much always outdoor, and it is very much as you arrive at the camp. And it used to be if you brought a watermelon, you could get into the secret club. I don't know if they still do that, but people did turn up with watermelons and get into the secret staff club. So there's lots of wonderful things if you're the ultimate fan to go and experience.
They were massive watermelons, aren't they? You just don't get that.
Well, no, you buy the little tubs of it now, don't you? It's all cut up already. So if you carry one of those, it's not really a feat. Even Baby could carry on those.
I do think that's a great line. It is a great line. I carry
it. There are so many lines in it. Like I said, the cultural impact of this film is massive. Is there anything else guys want to say before we head to the scores?
I did like the personification of Johnny having a sex hut. He doesn't have a chalet. He doesn't have a room or like a villa. He has a hut on the ground.
Entertain the ladies.
Yeah, and it's done up. It's a rustic kind of style, I suppose. But I guess if you're Patrick Swayze, it doesn't matter where. You could do it in a hut, in a tent. Doesn't matter. Ladies will love it.
Right, guys, let's head to the scores.
I'm Helen O'Hara, film journalist, author, and host of Women vs. Hollywood, a new podcast from the Stripped Media family. We're exploring the fall and rise of women in Hollywood, from the silent era to the present day and into the future. Each episode, I'm joined by three or more special guests to discuss the challenges that women face in the film industry and look at what we can do to change the picture. We've got actors, directors, producers, writers, academics, film experts, you name it, they're all here to explain what's going on in Hollywood. Search for Women vs. Hollywood now, wherever you're listening to this, and come join us.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. All of the scores are out of 5. You can have decimal places if you wish, and we will start with you, please, Kat, with your recommendability.
I'm going to give it a 3.5 because it's quite hard to recommend Dirty Dancing to someone who hasn't seen it, because it's one of those incredibly famous films where preconceptions about what it is completely drown out the reality. And as Rich has already touched on, a lot of people sort of dismiss it as trash that's kind of the fodder of hen nights and sleepovers. And I think the title can kind of, you know, mislead people as well. So as brilliant as I think it is, then I'm going to give it a
3.5. Okay. Rich?
I'll go for 3.5 as well, but kind of from the flip side. I think there'll be some people who will avoid it, but there are people that you almost need to tell them you need to see it, you need to look beyond that. And I think it might be a slightly harder sell, but I think more people would be rewarded for the story than might think. So I think it might need a bit of a push, but I think a lot of people should see it.
Helen?
I'm surprised with those scores. I'm going to go 4.5. I think sort of the kind of cultural impact it's had and its influence on so many things is a reason enough to kind of convince someone that they should really kind of check it out. And even just to sort of say, you know, this is Patrick Swayze at his peak, and, you know, he is very much missed, and the energy that he brings to it is fantastic. And, you know, we wouldn't have a key moment in Crazy Stupid Love if Dirty Dancing didn't exist. And, you know, the impact of its soundtrack, you know, it was like the first VHS to sell like millions and millions of copies. You know, it's had such a cultural impact. And if you're just like, oh, I don't want to watch it because it's got dancing, no, you should watch it because there's more going on.
I'm going to even higher, 4.75. I'm very surprised that Kat and Rich here. I think you should watch it. If you're of an age, you should watch it and put those preconceptions aside. And I can't think of many people wouldn't recommend it to. You know, even my parents used to love this film, and, you know, they're quite conservative. So, watch it. Get over yourselves. Oh, one thing I wanted to say, we always talk about Patrick Swayze in this film, but yeah, Jennifer Grey, she was this in Ferris Bueller, and she's done some other bits, but is there anyone else that's really come out of this? Obviously, we've got Newman, stroke Wayne Knight, stroke Nedry, stroke guy from Basic Instinct, stroke guy from Blind Spotting at the end. He'll always be Newman or Nedry.
The director went on to do, he was the director of Sister Act and Three Men and a Little Lady. Reasonable CV. Reasonable. Yeah, films with a strong female lead.
He'd won an Oscar for making a documentary about ballet dancers before this. I think it really shows, doesn't it? So, yeah.
It does. Repeat viewing score. Kat?
5, definitely 5. I've seen this film many times, and if anything, it gets more interesting the more I see it. And there's something about Jennifer Grey's performance and her self-discovery that I find really uplifting. And also what Penny goes through in the film, the fact that you see her at the end having gone through all that, dancing with everyone at the end. And I think that that's a really kind of consoling message. And it's just a really life-affirming movie.
Rich?
I'll go for 4. I think if you're in the right frame of mind or you're looking, this would tick a lot of boxes. It wouldn't tick every box for me, but I think if you're in the right, if you're after a particular kind of film where, you know, it's music or you know, that would work for me. I think it would rank highly in a certain category for me.
Helen?
Yeah, I'm going to go for 4 as well. It's quite short. It's only an hour and 40 minutes. So I always think it's longer, but it's not. I think because the songs are such bangers and they drive a lot of the story on, it keeps like, you can kind of enjoy the repeat viewing just for kind of a sing-along.
I think a lot of people watched this after Patrick Swayze died for the first time. And I think that's when a lot of men watched it and were like, oh, that's actually quite good. For me, this will be a film where someone says to me, do you want to watch Dirty Dancing? And I'm like, yeah, why not? But I don't think I'll ever consciously think I want to watch Dirty Dancing. But I think enough people will suggest it to me to say, I'm going to watch it many more times, hopefully before I die. Let's go for a four. Small screen score. Kat?
I'd give it a 4 because even though I know that it was absolutely massive on home video, I think it was the first VHS to sell over a million copies. And I very much associate it with with watching it in friends' houses and this, that, the other, I have to say it really went up in my estimation when I saw it at an outdoor screening. I've seen two. I've seen one in London and one just outside Manchester. And the atmosphere, as Helen's already said, is absolutely incredible. It's really electric. People, you know, they dance, they cheer, even the kind of the visceral hatred of Robbie that you feel from the crowd, you know, it's really all kind of quite moving. And
Robbie and also Mr. Kellerman's son, who is also the worst.
Yeah, exactly.
What a fucking...
And also those outdoor scenes that we've talked about already, you notice, I think, on the big screen how beautiful they are. Like that lake lift, it's like something out of a Merchant Ivory film or something when you see it on the big screen. It's really gorgeous. So, yeah, four.
Rich?
I give it a four. I think I can only imagine what it must have been like seeing on a big screen or surrounded by people. And this one... I think there are films, especially ones with music, where you feel if you're in a crowd, if there's a lot of people watching it, if it's a sing-along or something like that at the Prince Charles Cinema or something like that, it would do really well. But I mean, it seems to work well on a TV because it's, again, it's not effects-driven. It's not CGI. It's not, you know, he's actually on a log. But it's... and I think it works well on the screen and, you know, it's that kind of... one that you'd watch of an evening or of an afternoon. It kind of sits there and I think it works well because it's almost like watching Friends or something, like Hangover.
Helen?
Yeah, I'm going to join the four club. I think it's absolutely fine to watch at home, but if you have an opportunity to go to Secret Cinema Presents or an outdoor screening, then like it's so much fun. Like, everyone is just singing and it's just brilliant to hear them really, the songs really loud and have that joint experience. And like, if you're thinking, but I'm a man, I can't go, like, go. Because there was a guy who turned up with Johnny and he was ravaged by women. So like, if you're thinking like, I'm a guy, I don't know if I should go or not, just go because you will have the time of your life.
Oh, there you go. Nice segue. If you want women to ravage you, wait until Secret Cinema Presents Dirty Dancing and dress up as Johnny. Kat, where was the... You said you saw this at an outside screening outside Manchester. Where was that?
It was near Macclesfield in Cheshire. It was stately home. Can't remember the name of the stately home. But yeah, it was Future Cinema. It was a Future Cinema screening.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's near my neck of the woods. So I'm going to make sure and look the area out.
Definitely.
I'm gonna join a four party as well. Why not? I think would be really fun to watch this at would be at a Secret Cinema and doing all the dancing, going into different secret clubs and stuff like that. I think it would be really quite fun. Yeah, why not? I don't know. I need to listen to the soundtrack and know all the songs apart from Loverboy and Time of My Life, I think, before going there. Engagement score, Kat.
Five. I find it very hard to walk away from this film once I've started watching it. And I think they do a really good job of interspersing the nuggets of joy evenly all the way through this film. There's always like an era-defining scene just around the corner. And yeah, you really want to see it through once you're in. So,
Rich?
I'll give it a 4.5 because I think you kind of want to see where it goes and you feel like it's one of those that despite the relationship between Baby and Johnny seeming a little bit weird, you do want to see how do they do it? You know, they're going to get together at the end. So like, what are the mechanisms going on here? And then also, you know, you want to see Robbie get his comeuppance. You want to see the doctor get proved wrong because you're a snob, mate. And you want to see Johnny be proved right at the end. You know, he's a good guy underneath all that baby oil.
It's not much baby oil because if he had baby oil, they'll just slip out.
He's too slippery.
Yeah.
That's how I saw it.
You saw it with baby oil. Helen.
It was interesting watching it this time in that the kind of the dance that they're training to do and it's all focused about comes quite early on and then they do the dance and it's fine and stuff. And then for me, it kind of like, it goes into like this kind of weird dip bit until it peaks back up in the end. And I'd kind of forgotten that it was a bit like, they do the dance. And then you're like, what happens now? And then there's kind of other stuff. So for that, I'm going to give it a 4, I think, for engagement, because I was ready to get into the bit where it goes back up and they do the dance properly and it they do the lift and that. I was like, do the lift. Oh, they don't do it yet. Not yet.
I'm going to go for 4 as well. And I think it's almost as good for me, that final kind of dance scene, as, you know, many a Marvel film, like the final act. You're kind of waiting for the big fight at the end, but in this case, the big fight is this dance number, which kind of rallies everyone. And you find that, like you say, Robbie gets his comeuppance and Baby gets out of the corner. You know, all that kind of stuff happens in this kind of build up, and you get the lift. And you get the shoulder strut down the aisle. It's great. It's great fun. Yes, and that gives us an overall score of 4.17188. Great.
Good.
Well done, Dirty Dancing.
Yeah, did well.
It's you guys.
I know, it could have been higher.
It could have been higher with the recommendability for a film.
I know, I think I misunderstood the criteria of recommendability. I thought you meant how too late. Easy it... Yeah, I don't know.
I'm trying to think.
Filled with regret time. Now.
Normally I go around saying, "Oh, you got to watch Rocky IV," but then Rocky IV is just Dirty Dancing, but with boxing gloves instead of mambo moves. You know, when Baby comes out of the corner, Rocky comes out of the corner. That's how it works. It's there's montages there.
I'm going to think on that analogy. I'm not sure.
I don't know if there'll be a director's cut.
You've not convinced me, Rich. Sorry.
I mean, Rocky IV is one of the greatest films of all time, so maybe.
Are you looking forward to the director's cut, the revisioning?
I'm
without the robot.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You take the robot out. Where's Paulie? You've taken him away. And apparently, there's some. I am going to go and see the film at the cinema, but they've cut out some of Bridget Nielsen's scenes as well. And I suppose if you're in charge of removing your ex-wife from a film, then take that opportunity.
Rocky IV is like less than 90 minutes anyway, isn't it? So what are they doing?
There's about 40 minutes of new footage in there. It's mostly fight based, but I hope they haven't taken the music out. I mean, they've taken the robot and there's a bit more reason for why he's doing it rather than just I have to. I think there's a little bit more subplot as to why he goes to Russia, and I mean, it's a Christmas film after all, because he fights him on Christmas Day. So. And the robot does have a Santa hat on, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, thank you very much, guys, for joining us. Rich, coming back again. Kat, you'll have to come back again whenever you want to.
Oh, I'd love to.
Please do sign off by telling everyone where they can find you online. And, of course, mainly, Don't You Want Me Podcast.
So Don't You Want Me Podcast is at DYWM Podcast on Twitter and on Instagram. And you can find me at Kitty Costanza on Twitter as well and on Instagram.
And I'm on Twitter at BetamaxPod, normally tweeting tenuous links to 80s movies, things about James Bond, and basically it's become a glorified nostalgia site now, but I'm not quite at the stage of, oh, don't you remember these old video things?
Oh, just a final question before we go, a quick round. Are you Newman or Nedry for Wayne Knight? Helen?
Nedry.
Rich?
Always Newman.
Kat?
Definitely Newman.
Interesting. Yeah, it's a Newman for me too. Thank you very much, guys. We'll see you later. Bye.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Cheers.
Bye.
Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter, and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the Mighty People for their mighty, mighty tunes, and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben, and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K, Wood Audio. Tell him FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.